continuiamo con Jeff Koons e Alison Gingeras. Questa è la registrazione del primo incontro della serie Aspettando Punta della Dogana, promosso da Palazzo Grassi in collaborazione con lo UAV e l'Università Ca' Foscari di Venezia.
To get to that question of art history, because I think as you progress in from the Easy Fun series and the Easy Fun Ethereal series that we've just seen images of into this series, the Popeye series, this is a really fantastic work in which the layering not only pictorially becomes more complex, the art historical references become even denser, and the tension between figurative and abstract becomes more and more apparent. Perhaps you could talk about that movement towards abstraction in this series. For example, how do you define that transition between the easy fun paintings where this layering starts to the more these very recent works?
I think my newer work's a little more minimal, where I was more interested in more of a monochrome, reducing the layering, because you know I always like to change my work a little bit, and I didn't want to just end up, oh, I need seven layers, because the last painting had seven layers. So tending to just try to work more efficiently in a way. But a painting like this painting's called Peg Leg, and my friend Bill Bell and Maria Bell in Los Angeles, they have a Warhol painting, 49 Heads of Elvis. And it's really, when you look at it, it's not a very attractive painting. And it's oranges and greens and magenta, and it's quite repulsive. One time, a very unpopular, I think, Warhol painting. But it's a beautiful painting, and I think it's an incredible painting. So making this painting was really kind of making reference to that. And I have the Hulk head in the background, the superhero, the Hulk, as a representation of Elvis, of Andy's Elvis. If I turn it upside down, and instead of 49 of them, there are 20 of them here, and they're green, they're the Hulk. And on top of that, I grew up in Pennsylvania, Dutch, kind of a German area. And so there are a lot of people still that ride horse and buggies, and they've held on to this type of tradition. They try to hold on to it. And so the background in silver paint, and it's treated like a Warhol, going this direction and flip going the other way, is a steam engine meeting a horse and buggy. And so, today we can look at and realize that both of them are nostalgic technologies. And I use that as a symbol so that it puts us in contact with our own mortality, and that you realize that, your life doesn't go on forever either, and that we all have a sense of nostalgic, and that we're replaceable too very easily. And the figure in the center, Peg Leg, is missing one eye, missing one leg, but still has the sword drawn, still has the sexual energy to keep going, even though has been maimed and disfigured a little bit, but still has the sexual energy.
And this work continues the Monkey Train series. Would this be a Monkey Train painting?
Right, it's part of the Hulk Elvis
series,
but it's a Monkey Train.
And we were talking today about how the monkey also, I think it's just a great opportunity for us to decode some of these paintings, and perhaps you could talk about what the monkey is for you and how you arrived at that choice. It's not a totally arbitrary iconographic choice.
When I first started the Monkey Trains, I thought, oh, the Monkey Train's a self-portrait. And then I realized that the Monkey Train, the monkey is not a self-portrait, and that the monkey is everybody, and that it's any viewer. And it's a takeoff of Picabia's Portrait of Cézanne. And the Portrait of Cézanne is a wonderful Picabia piece. And it's a picture of a monkey, a stuffed monkey, and its tail's coming between its leg and has its hand on its tail. So it's kind of like a monkey in a zoo. And on top it says, Portrait of Cézanne. And on the side it says Portrait of Renoir. And on the other side, portrait of, what's the other one? A portrait of a Matisse. Or, but it's making reference that it's all artists, and basically that all artists are, they're not doing anything. Everybody's just masturbating like the monkey in the zoo, and nobody's accomplishing anything. So this painting isn't making that reference, but it's talking about mortality, and that it's about all of us being in contact with our own mortality, that we're all like the steam engine and the horse and buggy. So when you become conscious of your mortality, all of a sudden life opens up a lot because you don't take it for granted.
It even seems a little bit about artistic mortality or the longevity of visual languages, because you have on the bottom a layer of a kind of photorealist, a picture of a photograph of a train, overlaid a silver silk screen of a train and a horse and buggy, which is a more Warholian reference, and then again a photorealist rendering of the monkey, but the monkey is very much your vocabulary, or the use of the inflatable, which happens a lot in the sculpture that accompanies that series.
And I think the image of then the train, the photograph of the real steam engine coming at you in the background, is reference to that even though some things can be nostalgic and be replaceable, they're, you know, in the beginning of Superman, it's like, you know, when they talk about, you know, faster than a speeding bullet, you know, more powerful than a locomotive, there are certain images which are really iconic for like power, and the steam engine being like one of the most powerful images. You know, today we have nuclear power, we have other really superior powers, but yet this still emotionally, and we're back to the emotional narrative.
And culturally, right?
And culturally holds its weight. And so it's really like what you're mentioning artistically, of even being able to participate and to work within a dialogue that your own existence really isn't mandatory.
Like you've often said, you have to embrace the past. I've often read that quote, that it has to do with, in a way, when you were speaking earlier about transcendence and about the viewer and yourself as an artist. These are all kind of allegories and metaphors that run throughout your whole stretch of work, but here find a different kind of articulation. This is one of Warhol's single Elvises, which you mentioned earlier were one of the main references for your Hulk Elvis series. And could you start, maybe...
Can you go back to the Elvis?
Sure.
My young son, Sean, was standing in front of a mirror in our dressing room at home. And he was standing there, and he was about 2 years old. And I looked down, I saw him, you know, kind of right in front of it, just touching the mirror. And I said, that's Andy's Elvis. And because it was full portraiture and just, you know, male identity, full portraiture.
So you were attracted to that masculinity?
Well, the masculinity, but this is like a young child's consciousness of masculinity. To be able to deal with portraiture, you have to have things scaled down almost to a certain size of portraiture. And so this is a young child really becoming, identifying with their own sexuality. And, you know, Andy, maybe this was kind of the level that Andy could deal with male kind of sexuality in a way. But I think the Elvis really does touch into that, that this is a portraiture on a very kind of young level.
Like an immature level, or in that kind of, because it obviously is very
camp. It's a way a young child thinks about.
Yeah.
It's a way a young child thinks about masculinity. This is Hawk Elvis, and it's making a reference to Andy's Elvis, and they're drawing the gun. But if you look at the white area, that's really silver. It's a very, very reflective spraying of paint. And inside that silver, if you would drop everything out and just have complete contrast, you would see Led Zeppelin,
and it's in the dots, right?
In the dots and in the hawk. I mean, the hawk and the dots make up an image of Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, and they're there just as a symbol of really kind of young male testosterone. Really, because I just wanted to make a very powerful painting but also to communicate. When I was a young person, when I was about 18 years old, you know, to me, Led Zeppelin was one of the most powerful, you know, kind of art forms I came across that connected me in a very pop way to, you know, the beginnings of philosophy and of psychology and sociology, and created a spark within me that I wanted more in my life.
Here, I thought it would be interesting to move from the Hulk Elvis series, or to continue with that, but to bring up another theme that we could discuss, which is to hopefully decode a little bit of other art historical, less perhaps expected art historical material that you appropriate and use. So for example, this is Japanese 18th century woodblock, erotic woodblock called Dutch Couple, which you've used in part in this painting, also by the title Dutch Couple. And I thought perhaps you could talk a little bit about your sifting through art history and what you're attracted to and why you bring these things into your work.
I happened to see a Dutch Couple in an auction catalog, and it happened to be a Christie's catalog, but when I saw the image, I thought, my gosh, you know, this is what Picasso was looking at. And artists in the studio series and the Minotaurs and all this, you know, this is what he was looking at. And it was just so Western to me. And then, you know, to realize that this was done really in the very late 1700s, I was just amazed by that. So I wanted to incorporate that into a painting, bring it back to its essential line. So I did that on the computer, and then I continued the monkey paintings. And in the background, it's covered. It's very abstract, but again, it's just Led Zeppelin. It's an image of Robert Plant and Jimmy Page, but just abstracted. A viewer may not see that, but if somebody knows it's there, they can start to see it. Now, this is Ilona's Asshole, the title of the painting. But when I made that work, I just, you know, I was in Florence and I saw the Masaccio for the first time, and the Expulsion. And so with Made in Heaven, I really wanted to make a contemporary kind of Adam and Eve body of work, and really dealing with everything that I've been speaking about, the acceptance of self, and then when you can accept yourself, the transcendence to accepting others. And so the metaphor for self-acceptance in other bodies of work, the metaphor can change. But in Made in Heaven, it was acceptance of your body and the close-up of your body. So the painting Ilona's Asshole is just trying to show a vulnerable moment and the acceptance.
And it's just maybe as a side note, I've noticed that your work deals equally with the power of male sexuality and female sexuality. You do pay equal attention, I think, to maleness and femaleness in your work.
This painting is a reference to Courbet, a 19th century kind of sexualization of landscape. And so in the background, it's a waterfall that's put into the dots. And on top of that, it's a gesture that my son Kurt, because I wanted abstract gesture, and he made this gesture, and I thought, my gosh, you know, it's so fantastic. And so I just copied that, and we paint it. It's fake gesture because it's all hand-painted like this. We don't take big brushes and actually make those gestures. And then on top of it, there's a silver line drawing that's similar to the origins of the world. But it's abstract enough, if somebody asked you, you know, well, you know, what is that, that line drawing, you could say, oh, that's a young man walking his dog in the Swiss Alps.
Moving forward, I thought this is obviously not a work by Jeff Koons, but a work by Canova. And we were once, at one time, working on a show together that was to be entitled Koons Canova. And I just thought that being here in Venice, obviously Canova's city, it would be interesting to look at a few images with you, juxtapositions, art historical juxtapositions, yet another sculpture by Canova, two that are in the Hermitage, and your work, Bourgeois Bust, which many of you saw at Palazzo Grassi 2 years ago. I thought we could just sort of look at these images together, and I'd like to take this opportunity to share with the audience things that you've told me about your own subjective uses of various periods of art history. So the Canova kiss you've talked to me about in the past. And
the Michael Jackson, because for me, the Michael Jackson is really like the Pietà, and it's a reference to Renaissance sculpture. And having that dialogue, it's still the same triangular type of...
Yeah, because I think that's something that many... why it's so wonderful to have you here, because you're able to decode a lot of how you read art, whether it's ancient or contemporary, and appropriate it into your own sculpture. I mean, most people get caught up in the contemporariness of the subject matter here, but you are really dealing with classical composition and art.
I'm just dealing with art objects, and I also the Michael Jackson. You can think of King Tut, and if I look there, I can see a pyramid. Look at the leg of a pyramid. But I was working. You can layer things, but I think that I really was dealing with kind of Renaissance sculpture.
What follows are some images that your studio gave me of works that are important to you or that have been, let's say, maybe references throughout your career. So I thought perhaps the Venus of Willendorf is something that you've brought up many times in speaking about your work.
I like the Venus of Willendorf a lot, and I think it has a lot of references too. I mean, I can look at my rabbit, and it wasn't my motivation when I made the rabbit, but I can see a lot of similarities. And when I think about the popularity of the rabbit, I think it's because it does fall into some of these very iconic aspects of this. But the hair, the pleats, the seven pleats in the hair, if you look at the rabbit's ears have the pleats. The rabbit has very, very tiny little arms, like the Venus of Willendorf.
I can pull up the rabbit here. Here's a rabbit.
Yeah, that's a rabbit. You can see how you have these pleats going here, and a very large kind of round head like it has, the tiny little arms that are coming over the body, main kind of large kind of torso area, and then the larger legs. But there's a little similarity of form.
Probably tie up our conversation around this image, which maybe many of you haven't seen. You were invited this November to create a float for the Thanksgiving Day parade in New York, which is, I don't know if the Italian public is aware or has experienced this parade, but it's an incredibly populistic event in which cartoon characters and other pop culture figures are made into these enormous inflatable sculptures that are taken down the streets of Manhattan. And to me, this was an incredible moment of success for you, not only because of the prestige, but it was a moment, a utopic moment, because you really cross over into the, one of the most legible public arenas. This is no longer the elitism of the white cube. I mean, your rabbit was taken to Times Square, and I was wondering how you felt about that.
At first I thought, am I going to do this when they invited me to do it? I didn't know. Did it seem, too simple of a thing to do? And I'm really so pleased I did, and I did it for my kids. I wanted my children to, just enjoy that. Yeah, I did that, look. And just to have that moment with them. But it really was very special to me, because to be able to see something, when I was a child, I would watch that parade, and you have little fantasies, wouldn't it be nice to do something like that? And I met Salvador Dali when I was 18 years old. And I was a young kid. I called him up on the phone at the hotel he was staying at in New York, and I said, I'm a young artist, can I come and visit you? And he said, sure, you know, come up on Saturday. I went up there, and he met me in the hotel, and he had on a big fur coat and diamond studs on his tie and a silver top, a decorative element on his cane. And he invited me to go see an exhibition that he had at the Nodler Gallery. And so I met him up there. He was with a young French woman at the time, very beautiful. And he just spent a couple moments with me, posed for some photographs. But, you know, I really left that day thinking, you know, I could do this. Maybe I could have a life completely in art. And so that was kind of a similar thing with the Macy's Day Parade, this thing of when you're young, wouldn't it be great to do that? It was kind of that sensation of a sense that, I've been able to live a certain life in art so far. And, so it was that type of sensation.
And in the same way that Dali offered himself.
His generosity. Yeah. And so.
Just to conclude, I mean, Dali, you refer to in some of the recent work, too, with the lobster, which is a quotation or a reference to Dali's signature mustache. Here's the mustache again.
The background in this painting, this is called Mustache Lobsters, and that's a little bit like, I think of a Byzantine painting, like Heaven and Hell, these two lobsters, one from the top, one from the bottom. The mustache is a symbol of both masculine, being a mustache, or if you just flip it over, if you invert it, it's a woman with her legs open. And I have my Jim Beam J.B. Turner train in there, and Popeye's punching the train, and it's just vibrating a little bit. And that comes from an H.C. Westerman print. In America, H.C. Westerman, he's a subjective artist, deals very much with personal iconography. He's another artist I called up, and he met me when I was a young kid. So I wanted to have a dialogue in these paintings. Can you go back to Elvis? This one, this is called Elvis, because it's like a double Elvis of Andy, but it's feminine. But in the background's H.C. Westerman again, and I treated him like a Warhol car crash or disaster, flipped it, turned it upside down, inverted it, and treated one print in different panels like that. And when H.C. would make a self-portrait, he would give himself a pencil bar mustache. And he would make a transcendence of himself that you look at, and you would think, that's Clark Gable from Gone with the Wind. So it's the beginning of this transcendence through from personal iconography into Hollywood iconography of Westerman, into Clark Gable, into Elvis when you get into the girl, the double Elvis here. And then you have the lobster, which is a symbol of Dali, the tentacles of the lobster. And also Duchamp drawing on the Mona Lisa, L-H-O-O-Q. So you end up with the Mona Lisa. So you make this transcendence from very subjective things, the things you dreamt the night before that maybe you'll draw to the Mona Lisa.
Ink blue.
It's a karate blow. Delivered by an expert, it breaks the neck easier than a hangman's noose.
Ink blue.
It's a karate blow.